The Nick Abbott Habit.
This will probably be ancient history by the time you hear this, and I know this isn't a football podcast and that I am not qualified to talk about the beautiful game, or anything else for that matter. But can I say as a neutral that I am over the moon, Brian, at the result of the Manchester derby? I would have been sick as a parrot if it had gone the other way. It's not a Man United thing. It's a Jose Mourinho thing. I just can't stand the way he blames every setback on the referee, or it's the pitch, or it's the fans. And after this match, he actually blamed the gods, plural, just in case he didn't miss any deities out. Nothing personal. I just can't stand his hair and his face and his pouty whininess. I hate him. I hate him. And that story about him going into the City changing room to ask them not to celebrate so loudly and getting into a Portuguese shouting match with that scary Man City goalkeeper who looks like an explosion in a tattoo factory. And then getting water and milk sprayed over him. Well, that's Christmas come early, that is. But anyway, this podcast has been cancelled because there is a light dusting of snow on the ground. We would like to apologise for the non-running of this podcast due to a light flurry that might settle in exposed areas. We regret the closure of this podcast due to the possibility of inclement weather. We did not see it coming. Who knew it could get cold in December? We were completely unprepared. Normal service will be resumed when the wind stops gusting and the temperature is back up to balmy. Every year we seem to be stunned that the winter involves bad weather. We got the memory of a dead goldfish. It's always like this in winter. It's what winter is. But as usual, at the first sign of a snowflake, the entire country's eyes roll back in its sockets and we fall over like a felled tree. Can you believe schools are shut because there's 1 inch of snow on the ground? It were grand in my day. We went to school no matter what the temperature was. And we didn't have heating. No, we warmed ourselves by the hot blast of our cheese and onion crisp farts. And we went to school in shorts, even if the snow was up to our jingle bells. And the trains weren't cancelled because of the wrong type of precipitation. They were cancelled because the drivers were huddled round a brassiere on strike like they should be. And cars weren't skidding off the roads because of the ice. They skidded off the roads because they were made by meatheads in Birmingham who couldn't build an automobile to save their lives. Frequently let cars leave the factory without the right number of wheels. The good old days of Hillman Avengers and Morris Marinas and Vauxhall Vivas, they weren't dangerous in the cold. They wouldn't start in the cold. You can't have an accident if you can't get out of your garage. You tell that to the young folk today and you'll get a punch in the face. Hell, you get a punch in the face for everything you don't get arrested or fired for these days. If you are minding your own affairs and someone starts kicking you and you ask them politely if they wouldn't mind not doing that, it will be judged to be against their human rights, in which case you will be arrested, or it will be considered a hate crime, in which case you'll be fired, or if they just don't want to stop, they will be allowed to punch you in the face by law. A man's claimed he was punched during the interval of a production at the Old Vic Theatre. Now, if anyone deserves to be punched in the face at the Old Vic, it was Kevin Spacey, who ran the place for 11 years, during which time his hands went wandering. A camel searching for water doesn't wander more than Kevin Spacey's hands, but it wasn't him that got hit. The Old Vic's a theatre of world renown and a favourite of polite society, and these days getting punched in such an establishment is known as par for the course. A theatre producer called Adam Gale says that he noticed a woman in the audience was using her mobile phone throughout the first act of A Christmas Carol. You know, because it's my right, I could do what I want. He asked her to stop, and she immediately agreed and apologised for her embarrassing lack of tact. Just kidding. She egged on the man she was with to haul Adam Gale from his seat and belt him one. Go on, Dave, kill him! During the interval, the couple left. They'd had A Christmas Carol up to their eyeballs and couldn't stand that it interrupted their very important telephone time. So they were off. But Adam Gale thought they'd be waiting for him to attack him outside, which is what you would expect of people that object to being told that using a phone while in the audience of a theatrical production is not the done thing. He said things have escalated from rude audience members to people who assault other people. He said people are constantly complaining about sitting next to someone horrible, and they say they don't challenge them as they're afraid that they're going to make the situation worse if they ask them to stop. He's right. You don't have to look too far to see reports of this stuff everywhere. And these are just the ones that make it into the news. There must be thousands that don't get reported. Every time you go anywhere, there's some mouth breather with an attitude that seems bent on making everyone around them as miserable as they are. A woman was allegedly assaulted when she took her son to watch Dirty Dancing at Liverpool's Empire Theatre in September. I know. You're probably thinking that if someone didn't get assaulted at a performance of Dirty Dancing in Liverpool's Empire Theatre, you'd be surprised. But isn't that a shocking indictment of modern manners? For the avoidance of doubt, yes it is. The victim in her 50s claimed that she asked another female audience member to be quiet during the show. Naturally, she was attacked at the end of the performance and left with injuries to her face. Her beautiful face! There's road rage and trolley rage and escalator rage, but you might have thought that the theatre would be the last place that such idiotic, self-centred and boorish behaviour would reach, besides a funeral. But it's everywhere now. Cast members on stage are interrupting their own performance to tell the audience to turn their phones off or stop taking pictures. Shakespeare never encountered such a lack of etiquette. That's because the phone had not been invented when his wife was writing all of his plays. If it had, he most certainly would have encountered it. In his day, stage actors were lucky if they got through the play without encountering flying fruit. The distracted viewers in the balcony were probably having sex. Since then, of course, the upper classes have striven to distance themselves from the masses by embracing rules of etiquette to make the lower orders feel unwelcome. Sitting bolt upright and viewing a show in silence being one of them. In some things, the good old days have been vastly improved upon. Let's not go backwards. If you must eat and fight and tweet your sexual adventures while out of the house, don't go to the theatre to do it. Go to the cinema, like everyone else. Of course, this sort of thing doesn't happen in a vacuum. If it did, the protagonists wouldn't be able to breathe and would die within about 10 seconds. But that's not what I mean. I mean, we get our cues from the people that lead us. And the leader of the free world is a bright orange bag of vindictive nastiness. He might just be the most unpleasant, mean-spirited, obnoxious, vulgar, noisome and objectionable man that ever lived. He is also quite possibly completely out of his mind, which would explain him thinking that he is the most glitteringly magnificent person to have ever held the office of the President of the United States of Amersh. At least that's how he pronounced it at the end of a typically unhinged and rambling speech about how fantastic he was and how tremendous is his orange enormity and how huge his hands are. It was a speech about re-annexing Jerusalem for the Israelis in the interests of peace and stability, a move which led immediately to riots across the world and some entirely predictable deaths. But he didn't make that announcement about Jerusalem being the capital of Israel for the interests of peace. He made it to take our eyes off the Russia investigation that will hopefully soon have him and his anemic son-in-law in adjoining cells in a maximum security correctional facility. If they put him in an orange jumpsuit, he'll be invisible. But people weren't concentrating on that because of the way in which he concluded his shambolic address. He said, "Let's rethink old assumptions and open our minds to possible and possibilities." Which makes as much sense as anything else he's ever said. But it got worse. Like an automaton on the blink or a robot running low on batteries, he seemed to slow down and slur his garbled message. And only just got to the end without smoke coming out of his ears, the lights in his eyes going out and falling flat on his face to say, "God bless the United." Some said that a plate holding some of his bleached, bright white teeth in place became loose and caused his speech patterns to falter. Others say it's not a dental problem, it's a mental problem. There seems to be an upswell of agreement that the president is not well. You know, even less well than we previously thought. There's a whole line of people that are suggesting he's not fit to run a bath, let alone a country. A Republican senator called Bob Corker suggested that the White House officials are doing little more than running an adult daycare centre. The chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee said the president's erratic behaviour is putting the United States on the path to World War III. The Secretary of State reportedly called the president a moron. The National Security Advisor allegedly said that Trump has the mind of a kindergartner. Republican political campaigner Steve Schmidt said the question of his fitness, of his stability, is in the air. White House insiders tell Vanity Fair that Trump is unravelling mentally. These are his own people. Our own Theresa May went out on a limb and said that he was wrong to retweet anti-Muslim videos and that recognising Jerusalem as the capital of Israel was unhelpful, which is the verbal equivalent of dancing carefully around a grumpy bear on ice in stilettos. American newspapers have not been so dainty. The New York Daily News said, "The President of the United States is profoundly unstable. He is mad. He is, by any honest layman's definition, mentally unwell and viciously lashing out." The New York Times described Trump's recent behaviour in nautical terms, saying he is unmoored. He's not just unmoored. If he were a boat, he'd be clear of the jetty, lurching out to sea over storm-tossed waves, listing heavily, with a fire in the engine room. The White House Department of Non-Fake News explained his throat was dry. There's nothing to it. Which might wash if it were an isolated incident. But Trump exhibits all the self-control and thoughtfulness of a 2-year-old boy that's had his lolly yanked out his mouth. And this might be amusing if he was not trailed everywhere he goes by a man with a briefcase that holds the key to launching the deadliest weapon that man has invented, with the ability to destroy all life on Earth, which is the sort of thing that would not be out of character for Trump to do in a fit of pique if he overheard someone making fun of his hair. And if you think that we're safe, far away from North Korea, or wherever Hillary Clinton lives, think again. Because during an interview in 2016, the most powerful man on Earth refused to rule out using nuclear weapons in Europe. May God have mercy on us, Lord. Makes you want to take up drugs, don't it? And now we can. If we need our mood elevated, we can't. But if we need a bit of our personal area elevated, we can. As you know, the government is dead set against recreational drugs, which makes it odd that they have just legalised a previously proscribed recreational drug for purchase over the counter at the chemist. They did this after a public consultation which found that many people were buying it illegally online and from drug dealers. Of course, this meant that they did not know what they were taking until they took it. Drug dealers don't do quality control, and clearly the situation was a danger to the public. How refreshing and sensible to be finally treating marijuana this way, you might think. And you'd be wrong. It wasn't marijuana that the government relaxed the law on. It was Viagra. The erectile dysfunction pill is a recreational drug, in that it's not essential for health, and it's not used for work. You use it recreationally. If you use it at work, you are either a sex worker in the wrong job or a celebrity about to get fired under a blaze of publicity. You used to have to go to the GP to get a prescription, which was embarrassing and time-consuming, especially if you were in the throes of passion when you found you were in need of one. It was impractical to ask your paramour to wait till you could get an appointment at the surgery and dash to boots. The likelihood is that the moment will have gone. Now you can stock up for a night in without the 2-week wait for the doctor to okay it. Officials hope that this new convenience will steer people away from illicit sources of the drug, with all the dangers that are involved with buying mystery pills from unknown sources. And there are a lot of forgeries about. £50 million worth confiscated in the UK in the past 5 years alone. That's £50 million that could have gone to the powerful and influential pharmaceutical giants. The government had to act, and now those legal producers of the drug are going to get a lot more money. I bet they're so happy they can hardly count. The reason that the government is liberalising the law on erectile dysfunction pills and not marijuana is that Viagra is safe and grass is dangerous. At least that's what you would think. Marijuana is also a popular drug for criminals, of course. The growing and supply of it is completely unregulated, and the user has no idea what they're taking until they've taken it. The government's position is that by continuing to prosecute the war on specific drugs, they will prevent harm. Unfortunately, that's not true. Marijuana never killed anybody. Look at the government's own cause of death statistics for any given year, and you'll find a zero next to deaths from marijuana. Erectile dysfunction takers have not been so lucky. In 2014, Psychology Today reported that in America alone, according to a study of erection medication side effects during the decade from 1998, the year that Viagra was approved, through to 2007, Viagra had been implicated in 1,824 deaths, mostly from heart attacks. Similar drugs like Cialis has been linked to 236 deaths and Levitra to 121 over a much shorter period of time. And as well as the deaths, the three medications appear to have caused or significantly contributed to at least 2,500 non-fatal heart attacks and other potentially serious heart problems, and more than 25,000 other serious side effects like mini-strokes, vision loss and hearing loss. America's Food and Drug Administration's entire catalogue of adverse event reports for erection medications over 10 years was 26,451. That's 220 a month. The little gentleman's helper is implicated in a steady trickle of heart attacks, serious illnesses and death. It's available at a chemist near you. Marijuana has not been implicated as the cause of any deaths at all, and possessing it could put you in jail. That's the government's considered policy. Maybe they were drunk when they made it. And of course it's the month to be drunk. And it's the month to be eating. Eating vast amounts of food that you wouldn't ordinarily touch in any other month. We eat turkey and parsnips and sausages wrapped in bacon. Because sausages on their own aren't piggy enough for Christmas. And we eat mince pies and chocolate made into the shape of coins. And in Iceland, they eat sour ram's testicles. I'm not making this up. It's part of their winter feast and is another excellent reason not to go to Iceland, along with not being able to pronounce any of their names. You know, I bet the football commentators for the World Cup games featuring Iceland are already planning on taking the day off. They aren't so much names as letters pulled randomly out of a Scrabble bag. And they wouldn't want to accept an invite to dinner either, unless they have a real fondness for hoofed animals' intimate areas. And in case you're planning on throwing a traditional Icelandic winter feast, here's a recipe for sour ram's testicles. First, get a ram. Get a ram really drunk so that it won't mind the next bit, which is when you try to remove its testicles without it noticing. Then simply wash the testicles thoroughly, after which you should wash your hands thoroughly, or simply have them chopped off and transplanted with someone else's hands. And then discard the testicles' outer membranes, and when you have regained consciousness and stopped heaving, pickle them for several months and cut them into rectangular blocks for slicing and eating, or for slicing and throwing away. And if you're wondering, they don't call them sour ram's testicles because of the vinegar. It's called that because if you had your bits chopped off for someone else's dinner, you'd be sour too. And on that note, I wish you a happy Christmas, because this is the last podcast of 2017. Thank you for listening to these this year. And if you've enjoyed them, please think of someone less fortunate than you and buy my books of columns that I write on the Kindle store on Amazon. There's going to be a new one out soon, covering a year of Donald Trump and other unnatural disasters. And I'll be back on LBC this Friday and Saturday at 10, and all over Christmas and New Year period at the same time for my A to Z of 2017. As always, I appreciate your attention.
A Big Things Media production.